Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code SHAKE. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's kachava.com, code SHAKE.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling something really critical. If you follow the world of peptides at all, you know that getting FDA approval is, well, it's like finding a unicorn. It's just exceptionally rare.
It really is.
So our mission today is to unpack the entire scientific journey of one of the few that actually made it, Taysom Moreland. We want to give you the full blueprint, you know, from the lab bench all the way to clinical use.
And that journey is what makes Taysom Moreland such a foundational case study. When you look at translational medicine, I mean, the whole process of turning science into a real therapy, this peptide gives you a clear, evidence-based roadmap.
A roadmap for how it's done right.
Exactly. It shows the incredible rigor you need to move past all the hype that usually surrounds this field and get to something concrete.
Before we really get into the nuts and bolts, we do want to thank the people who support this kind of analysis. This deep dive into peptide science is brought to you by InfinityPeptide.com.
Okay, so our conversation today is really going to hit four main areas. First, we'll talk about the mechanism of Taysom Moreland, how it works upstream. Second, the preclinical work that laid the groundwork.
The animal studies.
Right. Then third, the very specific medical need it targeted. And finally, the clinical trial data, the safety stuff, and, you know, the necessary reality check for everyone.
Okay, let's unpack this right away. I think most of our listeners know what growth hormone is, but we have to get into the nuance here. Taysom Moreland isn't just GH in a syringe, is it?
No, not at all. And that's probably the most important distinction. It's an analog of something called growth hormone releasing hormone, or GHRH. It's powerful because it basically puts the body's own regulator back in charge, the pituitary gland, instead of just overwhelming the system. GHRH is the signal from the hypothalamus that says, hey, pituitary, release the GH now. Taysom Moreland just mimics that signal.
But it's a modified mimic, right? They had to change it chemically to make it work as a drug.
That's right. They added a specific chemical modification, basically a kind of fatty acid tail that protects it. It stops the peptide from being broken down by enzymes in the blood almost immediately.
So it lasts longer.
Much longer. It extends the half-life significantly, which means it can keep that signal going long enough for a therapeutic effect with, say, just a daily injection.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. Because it's stimulating your body's own pituitary, it keeps a really important process intact. Pulsatile release. Why is that ebb and flow so crucial?
This is maybe the most important takeaway on the mechanism. Your body naturally releases GH in bursts or pulses, mostly while you sleep. If you just flood your system with a constant supply of GH, a couple of bad things can happen.
Right.
First, you risk downregulating your GH receptors, so they become less sensitive over time. And second, and this is a big one, you mess up the natural feedback loop. The body just loses its ability to control how much GH is there.
So by acting upstream, like you said, Taysom Moreland keeps that natural rhythm going. It lets the body's own thermostat stay on.
Precisely. You get the benefits, more GH, more IGF-1, but you're doing it in a way that's much closer to normal physiology. It keeps the whole system in balance. It's just a safer, more physiological approach.
So that established how it works. But before putting it in people, they had to prove it in animal models.
Hmm.
What were they looking for in the preclinical phase?
Well, the preclinical studies had to confirm three main things. First, that it was actually binding to the right receptor, the GHRH receptor. Second, that the increase in GH and its downstream partner, IGF-1, was reliable and dose-dependent.
Meaning more drug equals more effect, predictably.
Exactly. And the third goal was, of course, safety. Given that you're playing with a growth pathway, what were the red flags?
Right. What were they worried about?
They were looking for any kind of structural changes in organs, basically damage from too much GH exposure over time. High doses can cause hypertrophy, which is, you know, uncontrolled organ growth.
And what did they find?
The findings were really clear. Tesamorelin caused these nice, predictable increases in GH and IGF-1. And this is critical. The sources show that the GH release stayed pulsatile. It validated the whole mechanism.
That's a huge win for the theory. But what about the safety side? Did they find those red flags at high doses?
They did, at levels way beyond what they planned for human therapy. They saw some things consistent with GH excess, like mild organ enlargement. But the crucial finding, the thing that lets you move forward to the FDA, was that these effects were reversible.
Ah, so when they stopped the drug,
everything went back to normal. And that established a clear safety margin. It proved not just that it worked, but that you could stop it safely if you needed to.
Which brings us to the huge leap into human trials. This compound, designed for a hormone pathway, somehow ended up focusing on people living with HIV. How did that connection happen?
You have to go back to the late 90s, early 2000s. It was a really complex time for HIV treatment. The new antiretroviral therapies, HART, were lifesavers. I mean, they were revolutionary.
Transformed the disease.
Absolutely, from a death sentence to a chronic condition. But those drugs came with some really significant side effects.
And one of the big ones was lipodystrophy.
Exactly, lipodystrophy. It's a condition where your body fat gets redistributed. So for a lot of patients, that meant losing the fat right under their skin, on their face, their arms, while at the same time gaining a lot of fat deep inside their abdomen.
This is the visceral abdominal fat, or VAT.
Yes. And that is not a cosmetic issue. VAT is dangerous.
Why is it so much more dangerous than, say, the fat just under your skin?
Because it's metabolically active. It's not just sitting there. VAT secretes these inflammatory molecules. It raises your risk for heart disease. It pushes you toward insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes. So for these patients, managing VAT was a huge issue. And at the same time, researchers noticed that many of them also had disrupted growth hormone secretion.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, you've got this perfect storm, a population with a very clear medical need, this dangerous fat, and a plausible biological reason for it, a hormonal disruption.
It was a textbook case of matching a targeted therapy to a specific problem. The patients were defined, the target VAT was measurable, and the biology was addressable with a GHRH analog.
So on to human trials. Let's talk about what they found. First in phase 2 and then the big phase 3 trials.
Well, phase 2 had to show that the mechanism actually worked in humans, and it did. They saw two key things. First, the expected rise in IGF-1, and second, the selective reduction in that visceral fat.
The selectivity is so important here.
It's everything, because it reduced the VAT without causing more weight loss or a loss of subcutaneous fat, which these patients were already struggling with. It just targeted the bad fat.
Incredible. So that gave them the green light for the gold standard, the phase 3 trials.
Right. The big, expensive, randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials. This is what the FDA demands. And they needed a really objective way to measure that VAT reduction.
So we're not just talking about a tape measure around the waist.
No, no. They used sophisticated imaging. The main outcome was the percent change in visceral adipose tissue measured by CT scans. It gives you a precise, undeniable measurement of the fat volume.
And what did the data show over that 26-week study?
The results were, both statistically significant and clinically meaningful. The people on tesamorelin saw a reduction in their visceral fat somewhere between 15 and 20%.
15 to 20% in just half a year. That's a huge decrease.
It is. But the sources are really clear about the follow-up, about what happened next.
Reversibility issue.
Exactly. The follow-up studies were essential. They found that if patients stopped the treatment after those 26 weeks, they gradually and predictably regained all that visceral fat.
But if they stayed on it?
If they stayed on it, they maintained the benefit. Which defines this not as a cure, but as a management strategy. The therapy has to be continuous because the underlying problem is continuous.
That has massive implications. The effect is completely dependent on staying on the drug.
It really is. It opens up all these questions about long-term costs versus the cost of not treating the comorbidities, like heart disease and diabetes that the VAT drives.
Okay, let's look at the full picture on safety. What did the big trial show about side effects?
Overall, it was considered well-tolerated, which was a huge part of its approval.
Yeah.
The most common side effects were pretty minor, things you'd expect. Some injection site reactions, a little bit of swelling or edema, and sometimes muscle or joint discomfort.
Which is a known effect of boosting growth hormone.
It is. But the big concern with any GH therapy is always blood sugar.
Right. Did it affect glucose metabolism?
It did, and they watched it like a hawk. The data showed some people had a small temporary increase in their fasting glucose early on, but for most that stabilized as their body adapted. And crucially, the rate of people developing actual diabetes was about the same in the tesamorelin group and the placebo group.
So it was manageable.
It was manageable, but it needs monitoring. And since IGF-1 is the main mediator, that also has to be tracked constantly to keep it in a safe range. The sources are pretty direct that while the data up to a year is strong, long-term implications beyond a year are still an open question.
So once it was approved for HIV-associated lipodystrophy, did the research expand?
Oh, absolutely. The success there made people wonder about other conditions. The most promising area right now seems to be targeting liver fat, or non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, NAFLD.
Which is just another kind of dangerous ectopic fat.
Exactly. And some early data suggests it might reduce liver fat too. But, and this is so important for you to remember, those uses are purely investigational. The only approved use is still for HIV-associated lipodystrophy. Getting a new approval means starting the whole process over again.
Okay, and here's where it gets really interesting, because we need that reality check. The success here is so, so specific.
That is the ultimate lesson. I mean, tesamorelin is a clinical victory, but only in its specific context. We have to be really clear about what it is not.
So what are those key limitations?
First, it is not a general weight loss drug. The trials didn't show it helps with standard obesity or reducing subcutaneous fat. Its effect is really selective. Second, there's just no clinical data to support it as some kind of longevity therapy or performance enhancer.
That's not a shortcut.
It's not. The benefits are tied directly to fixing a specific documented medical condition. And the fact that the effects are completely reversible just reinforces that. It's a management tool, not a lifestyle drug.
The lesson here seems to be that evidence matters so much more than hype.
Absolutely. Tesamorelin is this perfect model of how a well-understood mechanism, tested through the most rigorous pipeline possible, leads to a targeted therapy. It's the proof that peptide research, when done right, can absolutely go from bench to bedside.
So what does this all mean? It means you now understand not just that a peptide got approved, but the deep why and how. The molecular targeting, preserving that pulsatility, and finding that critical clinical need.
It's a fantastic story. And for those of you thinking about the future, here's a final provocative thought. We know tesamorelin works, but we also know the effect is reversible. The fat comes back when you stop. So how will future metabolic therapies evolve from here? Is the answer a compound that just lasts longer? Or does that reversibility tell us that maybe we need combination therapy, something that hits the GH axis in inflammation or another driver to get a result that truly lasts?
A great question for the future. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the complex but definitely rewarding world of pharmaceutical peptides.
We'll see you next time.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor, crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code SHAKE. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's kachava.com, code SHAKE.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.